All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, December 1st. That is
James Davis.
And I'm Doug Norrie, and we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short. And we are a site dedicated to helping you play and win on FanDuel and DraftKings. You can grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, which helps you calculate lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days. $29.95 a month after that. That includes our NFL projections as well. We think it's about as good a deal as you'll get in the entire business. So head on over to the site, grab that free 3-day trial, check out the projection system, and you are ready to play DraftKings and FanDuel. So, hey, buddy. Okay, before we get to today's plays, let's talk about, I don't even know what we're going to call this. Like, the Sixers court was crying last night. Like, what do we, you know, there was the tears of the Philly gods. What last night was... This never happens in NBA, but it happened last night. The Philly-Sacramento game gets canceled. You know, let's do a quick hit on this, because this is sort of like one of those... It's just worth it to kind of like revisit just before we get into today.
Yeah, I mean, so this was obviously one of those once-in-a-lifetime, you know, power outage, snowstorm, not in a lifetime, maybe once a season, events where a game in the NBA randomly gets canceled. This doesn't happen very often at all, and a lot of people were burned by this. You know, particularly people who played Joel Embiid, but there were some fringe players at other levels in the Kings-Sixers game as well. And it's just always an unpleasant feeling when this happens. But I guess, you know, if anyone knows us very well, they'll know that we're not shills for either FanDuel or DraftKings or any of these major sites. We try to be honest and straightforward when recommending or, you know, steering people away from certain sites or certain cultures that we don't appreciate. And all that being said, I don't think the sites did anything wrong here by not reimbursing players who, you know, just weren't aware that this was a possibility. You know, I think when it comes to DFS, like, we're putting our own money at stake, presumably money you earned or acquired by some other ethical means. And if you're going to put it to work in a game of skill online, like, you just need to be aware of all the contextual factors. And if you just weren't aware that this happened, or you were aware and you decided to take the risk anyway, as I did, by the way, I had Joel Embiid in my double up lineups last night, then I think, you know, you're just got to pay the price yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's two separate issues for me on this one. It's one, like, site's responsibility, whether they have any responsibility here. I agree with you. I do not think they do. I think it's a bad precedent to, it would be a slippery precedent to begin suggesting that, you know, they would reimburse or cancel contests based on sort of what happens. I'm not going to call it like these act of God things, but, like, I don't know, sort of in that range. You know, we have a chat room up on the site that's going pretty much 24 hours a day with people talking, you know, mostly basketball during the week, because that's the sport. And one of actually our more prolific players and chatters, Tyler F, I won't say his full name, although he may maybe want me to, but Tyler was in there last night sort of trying to explain to people, you know, he made some really good points about, you know, just offering comps about how, you know, the game was questionable. Sometimes you have a player that's questionable, the game was questionable, right? And so, like, yeah, sometimes it can be one guy, you know, he's going to try to warm up and he's going to play. And you kind of take the risk about, you know, last night, like Millsap or something like that. Well, the whole game was questionable. It's only frustrating because it's so rare, right? But I thought he made a pretty good point with chatters. The chatters, not everyone wanted to hear it for sure, and I totally get the frustration. The other part that is hard from our point of view is, as a projection system, what do you do with information like this, right? Like, so it's 6:30.
Yeah.
It's 6:30. We start getting wind right around that time on Twitter through some beat writers. And again, at that point, it was only beat writers that were reporting on this. There's not, those aren't official announcements.
It was actually one guy. It was one guy who runs a TV show about the Kings, right? And he was the first guy to come forward and say, there's condensation on the court. They're mopping it. I'll give the game a 50-50 chance to play, right? And so what do we do as a projection system? Well, this isn't the type of thing like rain or snow in football that actually impacts how anyone will play when they go out there. And it's not our job to evaluate, you know, if a game's going to be played or not. That's just not something we can do in any sort of straightforward way. So all we can do is try to communicate the risk, which I think we did in the chat room, both of us coming forward and saying, this is very risky. People asked for our opinions. We gave those. My opinion was that the game was going to be played. I think you were a little bit less certain. And then the game wasn't played. So I don't, but it's not like we can change the projections. We can't lower Embiid's projection to half of what it is normally, because that's not how many fantasy points he's going to score if he plays 28 minutes. So I don't know. I don't feel bad about how we handled it at all, but I do feel, you know, I do feel for people who, you know, got it handed to them last night, because that stinks. It's a really bad feeling. So my heart goes out to those people, and just don't take those risks next time if you don't want to.
I always say this too, and I wrote an article about this a little while ago that we posted in our strategy section about just bankroll management in general. And your general bankroll management can really influence your emotions tied to a specific outcome. If your emotions are wildly variant on a specific outcome, it's typically tied to how well you're managing your bankroll, right? Because if you bet 1 cent on it, and you wouldn't care, right? But if you bet 100% of all the money you had, then you really care. So I think part of these things too is to alleviate some of the emotional stress of when a game is canceled, which probably not going to happen the rest of the year. But when these things happen, I think you can really keep yourself in check by just making sure you're comfortable with, you know, your buy-ins on a specific night on these sites too. I think that's a big part of it that people sometimes underrate for their own, I don't know, mental well-being in DFS.
I think that's probably fair, but I do think that in a case like this, like, no matter what your bankroll is, this is such an absurd externality that it's very reasonable to like be pretty frustrated when something like this happens.
Completely. I'm not downplaying the frustration. I was frustrated too.
Even if you're just playing for fun, for free, this would be really annoying. So
right. All right. Well, let's get into this.
Let's do some picks.
Okay. So starting at point guard, you know, we have a slightly shorter slate than Thursday. Well, actually, I have to take it back. Shorter slate than yesterday, but though a bigger than normal Thursday slate. With six games on the docket, let's start at point guard. You know, you wrote the picks last night. Why don't you just give me some top point guard plays here, and we can talk about what's going on with some of these teams too.
Sure. Yeah. So point guard tonight, I think, is uncharacteristically shallow. There weren't a lot of great guys I felt great writing up, and that's primarily because we have so many teams that are either slow or potentially have blowouts tonight, or just don't have very good point guards, or like not clear guys in the point guard position. And so, you know, I could break it down on a game-by-game basis almost, but, you know, as you go through Dallas, Charlotte, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, like you start getting the idea. And so the guys that kind of come to the forefront, and there's two guys in particular that I think are going to be heavily owned and good targets at point guard tonight. The first one is Andrew Harrison. You know, this is not a guy who feels like a safe, sort of slam dunk play. But, you know, he scored 33 fantasy points against Toronto last night. And with all the injuries there right now, somebody's got to just both A, dribble up the ball up the court and take the shot for the possession. And at just 3,900 on FanDuel, Harrison is so cheap that, I mean, he doesn't need to go 8x points per dollar for you to be very happy with playing him on such a short slate. So I have him penciled in for something in the neighborhood of the low 20s fantasy points, which, you know, he's done in, let's see, yeah, three of his last five games, and in all the games where he's played 35 or more minutes. So yeah, I think he's a very solid play, given the general lack of options and given the fact that you don't want to pay up at this position.
Yeah, we had him on DraftKings last night. The biggest question for him, for both of us, I mean, really for the system, was just what Memphis was going to do at point guard, right? So they had, it stood to reason, because he had seen significant minutes, even with Conley playing, that he would be in line for huge minutes. I think we had him actually for like 35 or 36. So I think we got that correct in the end. But the guy hadn't really been that good per minute when he was on the court. And so it was one of these situations where it was really tough to evaluate just how different his situation was without Conley, right? Like, it stood the reason that he was going to see the minutes. He's just not a very good basketball player. And that being said, some of these guys, when their roles change significantly, especially when it's a sort of by subtraction, in this case, their starting point guard, who was a pretty high usage guy in the Memphis offense, and Memphis is so low, just so weak, really, just through the rest of their team. Yeah, I think you're going to see him as a chalk play. He was so good last night. The price hasn't moved nearly enough, and he allows you to fit some of these other big money guys. I'm not saying he's going to be the highest owned player on the slate, but he'll be definitely up there. You said it was shallow. I mean, after him though, where are we looking?
Yeah. So another guy I like here is Kyrie. You know, it's not a terrific matchup by any stretch against the Clippers for sure. But Kyrie, like, he's an interesting case where he's priced at the point where I feel like, unless it's a terrible matchup, he's always in consideration as like a reasonable floor guy. So to give Kyrie a brief profile of Kyrie as we go forward, he's taken a really interesting leap forward this season in that he's added to his shot total while also dramatically increasing his efficiency, and particularly from three-point range. And given that he's done that and his price has actually gone down a little bit over last year's totals, I think that we have an interesting buying opportunity here. A lot of the reason that Kyrie is priced the way he is because his minutes have kind of been up and down just because of Cleveland's kind of frequent involvement in blowouts there. So in a game where the Vegas sees the Cavs as only 5-point favorites, I think Kyrie plays the high end of his minutes and probably gets, you know, 5x points per dollar without too much difficulty here.
Yeah, the blowout concern Well, the blowout is the reason to look at why those minutes have been so up and down. I mean, they were randomly sort of blown out by Milwaukee last game, which is gonna look at that 31 minutes and wonder maybe if you weren't watching the game what happened. But you know, the Cavs pretty much they pretty much called the ball at the beginning of the fourth quarter in that game, which was crazy. They just kind of gave up even though they were still within striking distance. So, and he still saw 31 minutes. I love it. Chris Paul's never really a great matchup. He's a very, very good defender, obviously, and just the Clippers in general are. But I think you hit it on the head too with just some of these other plays in their price range and their matchups. Mostly these guys are playing just slow teams. Walker against Dallas, Dragic against the Jazz. It's really, I mean, even guys like George Hill against Miami, there's just a lot of very
slow. Cleveland and Milwaukee don't even have point guards. Like, you can play Matthew Dellavedova or Isaiah Whitehead. Like,
oh God.
These are not excellent options.
I have total Isaiah Whitehead PTSD from the other night, and anyone that plays DFSR is going
to
know this.
You had to go out of your way to call me. Even though like we had already talked about stuff, you just wanted to tell me about what happened with Tyler Whitehead or Isaiah Whitehead.
Yeah, like 45 minutes and scores like 9 fantasy points in the double overtime game was truly, truly unbelievable. After those two guys, is there anyone else in the consider range for you? We don't need to go into the whys behind it maybe, but
Yeah, sure. I mean, so some people are going to look at Steph Curry tonight. I'm not going to. And I'll talk about this in some of the other guys later, but I think Curry has enough of a bad matchup with Beverly and given how many options the Warriors have, I'm not going to be looking in that direction. And actually, on that same note, I think Patrick Beverly is sort of an interesting option. I mean, we've seen him provide plenty of upside on these prices in the past when things break just so. And given that, you know, Golden State particularly has such a disparity between point guard and shooting guard defense, and that Thompson's a pretty good defender, whereas Curry is a terrible one, this could just be one of those games where Beverly knocks home a handful of threes. You know, he's got double-digit rebound upside, has, you know, 4 or 5 steal upside as well. So it's not likely by any means, but given that he's just 4,400 right now, and it's been pretty solidly averaging close to 5X on that.
Yep.
In the last four games, especially when the minutes are there, I think he's a pretty reasonable option. I mean, you're never excited to play Patrick Beverly. You can trust me saying that as someone who's played Patrick Beverly maybe more than anyone else in the DFS industry, right. But he gets the job done. And so if you just don't want to spend up for Kyrie in a bad matchup with the Clippers, which I understand, or you just don't want to spend up at a bad position, I think he's a guy on your consider list.
Yeah, he's funny because I played him in the live final for DraftKings last year and was probably the only he was very, very underowned. He was great. So I always have this now.
I forgot he was great in that game. Yeah, that was awesome.
We was knocking down threes. And so that always have enough, you know, I didn't win the live final, obviously. But I always have an affinity for him because we were kind of on him in a time where no one else was, and he ended up being good. So, I'm totally with you. He's not a traditional point guard in the sense that, I mean, Harden is clearly their point guard. He's more of a shooting guard, spot up three, needs to have Harden driving kick. Probably will be on the court for a while because they need his defense in this matchup. So, yeah, no, I like for the minute.
He does handle the ball more than your typical shooting guard.
Oh, sure,
I mean,
sure,
like
sure.
He's still, you know, touching 6 assists in two of his 6 games this year. So it's not like, or 2 of his 7 games. So it's not like he's totally absent from the ball handling duties or anything like that. But yeah, that's also why he's cheap. So I don't mind it.
On the shooting guard, walk me through a couple guys here at shooting guard. Again, I don't want to say this caveat each time, but there are so many bad matchups on this slate. So it's just, you really kind of need to wade between them because, again, Cleveland, the Clippers, Miami, these teams are slow. They play good defense or some combination of the two. So what are we looking at shooting guard?
Yeah, well, I think the Golden State-Houston matchup is a good place to start here. Harden, and it's tricky. This is not without its risk because this is, you know, Vegas sees this as a 10-point game in Golden State's favor. So you're definitely not thrilled to play any players in a 10-point spread game. That being said, Houston has a decent tradition now of even when they're trailing and even by a decent amount going into the fourth quarter for just giving the ball to Harden and letting him do his thing. And I think it's actually worth noting while we're on the subject that so what does a 10-point spread mean when it comes to basketball? Well, generally, I mean, on a really high level, what that means is Vegas sees the one team beating another team by about 2.5 points per quarter. And so obviously there's some standard deviation around that, and it won't always work out perfectly. But if the Warriors are favorites to be kind of 7 or 8 points up going into the fourth quarter, Harden's going to get his minutes. So I think it's not quite as dangerous as many people perceive it to be. And then the second thing is that, you know, you have to look at the type of player you're looking at when it comes to a potential blowout. So actually, Klay Thompson, who's the other shooting guard in this matchup, I think he has a decidedly worse game script risk than Harden does, because if Golden State's up a lot, it really diminishes their need to utilize Thompson on the perimeter, versus if Houston is down by a lot, then they need Harden more than ever, right? So I think with all those game script considerations, taken into account. Both of these guys are reasonable plays. I would put Harden as safer. Thompson is more of an upside guy. And, you know, caveat all that by saying that there's no such thing as safe in a 10-point matchup. So that's kind of what I'm looking at on the top end.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you. The game is an insane total. It's like 230 or something like that going in. You know, Houston has to knock down their threes to stay in this game. They've been exceptional at that this season, mostly because of the way they're using Harden on sort of like driving kick stuff. So they are a team that can hang on the offensive side, but defensively, that's where you're really just kind of hoping and praying.
And it's actually something I like about Thompson in particular here. So I think, you know, we talk about the problematic issues with defense versus position stats a lot. And Houston is a classic example of this where, you know, sure, you look at them and you're like, well, Harden, he's not a great defender. But then you look at their shooting guard defense and you realize, like, you know, and it's not been a great case this year just because Beverly's been out for most of the season. So Houston has actually given up the second most points to opposing shooting guards this season. So all that aside, the Rockets in particular, the way they defend the guard position, generally speaking, is by sticking Patrick Beverly on the best guy and Harden on the second best guy.
Right.
And they can kind of both interchangeably guard either shooting guards or point guards in that way, which is to say Harden kind of doesn't guard the guy and Beverly works really hard
right.
to play defense. But then given that Golden State has a classic point guard who's amazing, you'd almost have to guess that it's a guarantee Beverly will guard Curry, in which case Harden will be guarding Thompson. And I think that makes Thompson, you know, he might be like the guy that they go out there in one of those, you know, Thompson scores 15 points in the first quarter sort of situations. I do think his upside is higher than normal, even if his risk is higher as well.
Yeah, in the past too, Houston's been inclined to sort of try to hide Harden on whoever they think is going to take. You know, in the past, it was I'm pretty sure they would hide him on Barnes, right? Because they were just like, well, if
maybe have Ariza cover Thompson.
Exactly. Yeah. Like they would just try to hide Harden on the guy who was least susceptible to just kind of not just killing them. They can't do that anymore, right? They can't.
You really run out of options because you so say you cover him with Ariza, right? Now you can say, well, like who covers Durant?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, Ryan Anderson already can't cover Durant.
Right. They have significant matchup issues here, and so I mean, unless they just want to like move him all the way down to Pachulia. But anyway. After him, you know, we have a guy like Giannis coming off a huge game against sort of like I would call it almost like a statement game for him against Cleveland the other night. They ended up blowing out the Cavs. He was amazing. He really just did everything you kind of want him to do as a basketball player. He, you know, 34, 12, and 5. He was all over the court. He was actually, you know, guarded by LeBron and actually taking LeBron to the basket and posting him up. Do you think coming off that huge game, he is less than Harden as a shooting guard on FanDuel, and actually, we kind of glossed over him, but he's probably a great point guard play on DraftKings. Where do you see Giannis sort of fitting into this group?
Yeah, I think Giannis is excellent on DraftKings in particular. I think on FanDuel, he kind of winds up being a little bit of the odd man out just because, you know, unless you're going to go double expensive, I don't think that you're going to wind up playing both of them. And, you know, we have Harden as just a hair's breadth better value play. So that's why Harden comes to the top of the list here and Giannis, you know, gets left by the wayside. But yeah, no, he's a terrific play. And I think they're basically interchangeable on a value perspective. And if you want to take more safety in a game with a closer implied spread, then I think Giannis is a great option.
This is why I like playing both sites, frankly, because you get, you just get the better Giannis value on DraftKings and you can just sort of naturally hedge between the two and feel like you are getting the better side of both of their prices. So
that's why I like playing so many sites like Fantasy Factor.
Tell us about Fantasy Factor.
Fantasy Factor is one of our sponsors and a DFSR partner. They've actually been offering free rolls for DFS users or DFSR users recently. We had a fun $20 free roll last night where we had like 40 people. And, you know, $20 is not going to be life-changing money, but it's enough to get you started with a bankroll there. And Fantasy Factor also does a really cool thing where when you sign up there and make at least a $10 deposit, they just give you $5 to play with. You don't need to wait for it to drip out. You can just put it right in a contest. If you win, the money's yours. And if not, it was on them. So, fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR to get started. And you can check it out. But, yeah, keep looking back on the site for more free rolls because I know more of theirs are coming.
Yeah, on the cheaper side of shooting guard, we have Sean Kilpatrick. His price has come up into that mid-5,000s range. Now, he's coming off a 47-minute game against the Clippers, but that was a double overtime game.
Yes.
So if you're looking at the game log, he didn't play one less than regulation. Like, they did go to double overtime. Do you see him kind of like as a chalk play based on just the pricing difference that you get for him at a sort of weaker position?
I don't know if you can pencil him in as a chalk play necessarily. I mean, what you like about Kilpatrick is that the minutes have come up recently, and with the minutes have come increased opportunity. And so, and it seems to be sort of like an organizational decision with the Nets to play him more and allow him to take more shots. And so we don't really know what the fair price for Kilpatrick will wind up being, you know, given that he's taken 17, 10, and 13 shots in the last three games and been pretty effective on those shots. I could see him being pretty good going forward. I don't know. I mean, this is the high end of what I would want to pay for a guy like this. And right. I would normally be pretty unexcited about a play kind of in this price range for a player that profiles like this. But given the lack of other options, I think it's a fairly reasonable gamble.
Yeah, the biggest issue with the Nets is just wondering where the minutes are going to go on a game-to-game basis. Now, he seems, of all of them, maybe the safest guy, which is a relative statement because none of them are particularly safe. He, right. What helps him is that he can kind of play one or two depending on where they bring him in rotations. So he can be the primary ball handler, though he's not a particularly good point guard. They will use him in that role, sort of as they rotate in Foy and Whitehead as well. So I think it's just one of those mid-tier sort of get away from the position. A lot of the other matchups aren't that great. And that's sort of where you can just kind of find the excuse to play him. And like you said, the shot volume is good. If he's going to be one of the higher usage guys in that offense, then I guess that we're just going to need to do it. All right, after, let's go down to small forward. I guess one of the bigger questions probably tonight is going to be Durant or LeBron, I think. Durant's slightly more expensive on FanDuel, and I think he's actually going to be more expensive on DraftKings as well. Where do you see these two guys kind of stacking up against each other?
Well, you know, so I think LeBron is pretty definitively the safer play tonight just because of the game script considerations. If the Golden State-Houston game gets out of hand, then, you know, I think Durant is a dude who could disappear, although that really hasn't been the case this season. I mean, he's been excellent and been paying his price very routinely. And I think with both these guys, we're kind of splitting hairs on some level. I mean, you know, they're priced similarly. They've been putting up similar production. Durant, I think, almost uncertainly has bigger upside just because he kind of will take on a bigger scoring burden from time to time. He rebounds the position extremely well, obviously, and just such an excellent shooter that he can really just put up insane fantasy totals when it's all clicking. I think given the fact that Golden State, it lines up so well against Houston defensively, and that Houston, like, again, like Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, like, who's going to possibly cover this guy? So I think that, I think both are great options. I don't think I would stick my neck out and like issue a no halftime challenge on either of these guys. So I think you kind of pick, like, do you want a slower paced game with a tougher defense with LeBron, or do you want a faster paced game that might have a blowout in Durant? And then you go from there.
It's interesting that Vegas has the Cavs at right around 110 points, which is, that's not the high level for them, but it's decent considering the Clippers are a very, very good defensive team.
Yeah, they've been excellent this year.
Yeah, this one's close. This is one that we'll probably examine as we get just closer to game time. It's another one where I'm probably going to possibly take the savings on LeBron, but yeah, this one's pretty close. After those two guys in the higher end, the small forward, where else can we look?
Yeah, so I think the other guy that we're looking at for tonight is Harrison Barnes, and I'll say right now that none of this feels terrific. Like, you know, after the two expensive guys, things get pretty shallow and there's a big drop off. And actually there is one other guy, saving grace potentially, that you can pencil in after that. But Barnes, with Dirk missing this season, has really shot a ton. I mean, he's got two games with 24 shots, with Deron Williams being banged up as well. They're definitely relying on him for more of the offense. And, you know, it's just, he's no longer the guy that just stands in the corner and does nothing. Like, he's a real option on offense. And so, you know, while Charlotte, certainly not an elite matchup by any stretch for opposing small forwards, this is just kind of where we're at right now, right? So I don't really know what's going to happen tonight. Like, Deron Williams might sit the second half of a back-to-back, and maybe we get some more Harrison Barnes action than even usual, but he's just more a guy you can slot in as being solid if unspectacular.
Yeah, he's the big thing with him was with no Dirk, they do kind of rotate him between the three and the four, and that's why you see so many minutes out of him when Nowitzki doesn't play, because they'll go small ball four with him. And yeah, he just has turned into a guy that takes a lot of shots. Like, this is, it's funny with him because this is somewhat new territory, because we don't have historical precedent with a guy like him, because he's just never done this before in his career, never had to, playing with those two other guys in Golden State. And so, you know, sometimes for basketball, you rely on kind of historical averages for a player, because NBA players are really, really predictable when you have enough of a sample size. But him, this is just, but it's rare that you get a totally, totally new situation from a guy that's been in the league for a while, right? It's one thing if the Andrew Harrisons of the world, you're just trying to sort of figure them out. But Barnes has been in the league for a while, and you're still just kind of like, well, this is just kind of a new player. So I really like the price. I think he's going to be a pretty popular play. He's sort of like in that Sean Kilpatrick falls into the middle tier, which is helpful, especially on like somewhat shorter slates to sort of round out your salary cap in a safer way. So I think you end up seeing him as a pretty popular play. Who was the other guy you said was a saving grace?
Yeah, well, I think Troy Williams. Actually, in writing up the article last night, I just had a brain fart and was conflating Jeff Green's injury news with Troy Williams's availability. And this is just like one of those things that happens when your mind is swimming in a sea of 10,000 players.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I was like, well, the Grizzlies are banged up, and that's given Troy Williams more opportunity. And Williams, by the way, 30% start in cash games last night. So this isn't, I'm not breaking any news here, but, and then I was like, for some reason, conflating that with the Jeff Green being banged up thing. And so I was like, oh, well, if Green plays, then he's a worse play. But that's just obviously Jeff Green's on the team, so that doesn't really matter. That being said, you know, Williams last night was solid on his prices. And, you know, continuing to pay the price when he does get starter level minutes. He kind of came out of nowhere, but I think we're to the point where we can trust it now.
Yeah, no, he was a guy. We paired him with Harrison sort of on a whim and a prayer last night on DraftKings, hoping that they would just see the minutes that we were expecting. He was another guy that had played minutes even when the Grizz were relatively healthy. So again, these guys fall into the not very good players, but a lot of minutes category. And that just means a lot when you're cheap. That he's not a slam dunk at his price on these minutes tells you more about him as a player than it does really about anything else. Like,
well, it tells you that we just don't know anything about him as a player,
exactly,
frankly. I mean,
right.
Before, let's see, November 25th, the guy had played like 20 minutes in the NBA. So I think it tells you mostly about the fact that Memphis doesn't trust him, and Memphis is terrible, and so, or like has a terrible cast right now. So I think you can add those things up and figure that he's probably not a stellar player, but you just don't need to be on 3,700. And if you can't pay up big on small forward, I think he's a very reasonable high floor option.
Yeah, the guy I'm really confused about with Memphis is I keep waiting for Tony Allen to get significant minutes.
I know.
With the team so thin, and that just isn't happening, which is just very confusing.
Maddening.
Yeah. It's very maddening. And they've kind of spread it to Jarrell Martin, who's somewhat of a usage guy off the bench that you can't really trust it. So Memphis is just a mess. It's helpful that some of these guys are cheap, but as a whole, the team is bad, and we just like you said, we don't know a ton about the players. Let's go to power forward. Power forward on a night-to-night basis, we just say this most nights, is a very difficult position in the current NBA construct. What do you like here?
Yeah, so at power forward, I think there's two options that jump to mind for me, and those are the two guys playing in the Brooklyn-Milwaukee game, and that's Jabari Parker and Trevor Booker. So I'll make a case for each of them separately, but Jabari, you know, I came out and called him one of the safer up-and-coming commodities a couple weeks ago, and then, you know, he just kind of disappeared for a few games. So maybe he's not the safe guy that I put forth, but this matchup with Brooklyn really is excellent. I mean, the Nets have allowed the second most fantasy points to opposing power forwards this season, and Parker's minutes have really gone up and down a lot also as a result of blowouts. And so given that this game rates to be quite a bit closer, I think that he'll wind up paying value. And he's a guy, like, he's 6,400 now. If he gets consistent minutes for like a month, he'll be 7,000 and, you know, has a ton of upside. He's an electric athlete, and I think he's quite a good play tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you on Parker. He kind of falls into like that middle tier Harrison Barnes-y kind of range where if, you know, outside of a lot of just different really great punts, you do need to fill out your lineups with these on short slate, guys like this on short slates. There are a couple other guys at power forward tonight that I find to be interesting if unspectacular considering the price. One is Jermichael Green. Green played 34 minutes last night with a banged up team. I think you can probably put him for somewhere around that, I don't know, production again tonight. He was very good, 16-5. He was buoyed by a ton of steals. So, now, good. Look, Green is a very, very good defender, so he will get steals every once in a while, but he is not a 5-steal-per-game guy, so take that into mind. This game was probably, you know, he had 34.5 FanDuel points. The number's probably closer in, like, that 25 actual point range because you just can't. You just can't give him 10 points worth of steals every night, if that makes sense. But I do see at 4,400 on the minutes upside, you know, 34 minutes is really the story for me with him there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. It's a very tricky position tonight, so I don't know. It's going to be a weird one unless a punt option comes forward.
Give me your thoughts on Kaminsky. He was a guy that had a lot of DFSR users on massive tilt the other night against Detroit. He's still starting with Marvin Williams out. played 27 minutes. That game got a little out of hand last time around. He was horrible from the field. I think he was like 1 for 11. How much does a shooting performance, because like he's still very high in our system, just based strictly on the minutes that he stands to see. Where do you see like a bad shooting performance? Like, can you go back to him on that? Because I know a lot of our users are going to do the old never again with Frank Kaminsky, and I'm just like not sure that's totally correct.
I'm not sure it is either, but I'm not sure it's totally wrong either. Like,
right.
I mean, Matt, you don't do it for emotional reasons, but just from a strict performance basis, like we now have one and a half seasons on Kaminsky where he's shooting 32% from three, right? So The question is how often will Charlotte continue to let a dude shoot 4 to 7 to 8 three-pointers a game who makes just 28% this season? Like, that's terrible. That's so bad. And it's not like he really does a ton on the defensive end or even on the boards, frankly, to want to justify playing him that much. So, yeah, he still has the opportunity, and I don't suspect that'll go away. But a lot of the reason they got blown out by Detroit was specifically because Kaminsky was so terrible. So while I think there's still a lot to like here, I mean, primarily just on the price, I do think you're certainly taking on some risk that he just goes out there or that they just get sick of seeing him destroy their hopes every night after night after night.
Well, he's interesting too because – and Marvin Williams has had this problem too, is that team – they'll run these high-set pick and rolls with Kemba, and other teams are like, go ahead, dude. Kaminsky's looks last game were wide open. Like they weren't contested shots. It's not like he's shooting off the dribble. They're getting high pick and roll sets with him, and he's – and teams are just fine to double-team Kemba so he doesn't drive to the basket. And he just can't knock the threes down. And like I said, that was a problem for Marvin Williams. It's a problem for Kaminsky now. And this is just it's just a problem with Charlotte in general. So, yeah, I don't know. The system likes him now. 32 minutes might be a little bit high for him. Something we'll evaluate as the day goes on. Let's finish it up with center. Center is another one. As we get down to the bottom of the list, it's power forward and center on a given night. It just sort of seemed like that area that I just wish I wasn't forced to play at all. I don't really love rostering some of these centers. Where can I go? Is there anyone safe here?
I don't think so, at least not as of what we're talking about right now. But you do have some, I think, fairly reasonable options. I mean, you know, worth noting here, because people will look at the names as they just kind of scroll down, and they'll see guys like Hassan Whiteside and Rudy Gobert and maybe DeAndre Jordan and think, okay, well, I've got something to work with here. You kind of don't have anything to work with here because, right. First of all, Whiteside and Gobert play each other, so you can kind of cross that one off. Jordan plays the Cavs, who are just kind of slow and generally fairly tough on centers as well. And, you know, while he was excellent against Brooklyn a couple games ago, going 21 and 23, that was also in 44 minutes of double overtime. So you can't really count on his minutes going forward. So the options that do spring to mind here, the first one actually, I think, is Marc Gasol. I mean, Gasol has been a little bit up and down this year, but that's primarily been because of the minutes. And given how shorthanded Memphis is right now, they're definitely going to need to lean on him a little bit more on the offensive end. And I actually really like how crazy Orlando has been at the center position this year too. Like they just can't really figure out what they want to do. Biombo, they're experimenting with him as a starter right now, but he's just such a foul box that it's going to be really hard for him, especially because like I think they've kind of had the benefit of not playing a lot of offense first centers, but I could see Biombo just being in foul trouble in the first few minutes of this game. And while Gasol's kind of expensive, it's like it's not really the price you want to pay for him necessarily. You're kind of lacking safety anywhere else, so I could see this being a night where you want to go there.
My only concern with Gasol is that Memphis, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do now because they're so shorthanded. They've been really careful about managing his minutes on back-to-backs, and typically they've run him less minutes on the front end of a back-to-back. So like 24 minutes and then 35 and then 26 and 35. But last night he played 35. So now again, Memphis has been pretty good about information. Like they've been really forthright with how they plan to use their players before games. I simply do not know why teams do that, but I don't know if it's like a precedent that they want to set with sort of just like news reporting.
Or let their fans or their fans complain if a guy goes out there and only plays 20 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
but they've
I wanted to see Tony Parker tonight.
They've been very forthcoming for that news. So we'll monitor that during the day. If you don't hear anything, I actually would think that he actually plays his full allotment of minutes. So it's something to keep an eye on there. I'm with you on Gasol.
I think he does because this is a winnable game too. And Memphis, like, I think the way they perceive their season is that it's not dead or anything, right? I mean, their record is still competitive, and which is like actually amazing. I mean,
Well, they played
nobody.
Think about
the fact that they're 11-8. Like, that's amazing for this team right now.
I actually looked at their schedule yesterday because I noticed the same thing, and I went back to their schedule. They've been really lucky. They haven't played anyone really that good. They haven't played the Warriors. They haven't played the Spurs. I don't think they played the Clippers. They haven't played the Cavs coming from the East. Like, they've been very lucky with their schedule, especially in
that's
the West.
That's fine, but this is still the hand they've been dealt, right? And
right.
Given that they are favored here against the Magic, like, or I think it's a pick 'em right now, I think that they are, you know, I think you can very strongly consider them for just trying to continue to move forward and be competitive. So I think Gasol gets his minutes tonight. I think the fact that he played the minutes on the front end of a back-to-back is encouraging, actually, because it means that they're kind of in this win now sort of mode, and he's the only way that they're going to win. So I think he's that puts him a cut above some of the rest in a safety perspective.
I take it back. They played the Clippers twice, but the other teams they haven't played yet.
They beat the Clippers, yeah.
No, they didn't. No, you're correct. After him, what about a guy like Capella? I have concerns about him, though he's showing up pretty high in our system. What do you think about a guy like him facing the Warriors?
Yeah, so it's a strict upside play. I mean, he's the exact type of guy who could disappear in a potential blowout. Yeah. Like, if the Rockets are trailing by 8 going into the third quarter, Capella just won't touch the ball on offense at all. And that's not good, obviously. But as I was digging back through this, because I was trying to kind of parse out what the system's seeing here and, you know, where it thinks Capella's going to get its value, Capella is just obliterated the Warriors on the glass in the last couple seasons. Like, there was a playoff game last year where he had 12 rebounds in 17 minutes and another early in the season where he had 8 rebounds in 17 minutes. And, you know, he's athletic, he's big. You know, he just came off a career high in scoring a few days ago, scoring 21 points. So the stock seems to be on the rise, or at least the perception of him in Houston seems to be on the rise. So again, this is not safe. Like, this is not something you just want to just jam into all your cash game lineups without thinking about it. But given the fact that center is so bad, and I don't think the perception on him is that high, I could see him being a great tournament option.
Yeah, Capella's interesting because he really has, I would say, almost like an implied cap on his minutes for two reasons. One, like you said, it's really hard for them to play him in blowouts when they're down, because he's not going to be part of the way that you catch up. They also can't play him a ton in crunch time because he can't shoot free throws. And so he kind of gets... So when you have those two things kind of come together, you can run into some problems on minutes. That's not a rule. Like, he has seen 35 minute upside sort of in close games. So mostly when they want to keep it close because they have an opposing center that they want him to guard on the court. Like, I'm thinking specifically about the Detroit game where he played 35 minutes and the game was close. And, you know, you kind of have two guys on the court that can't shoot free throws in him and Drummond. But yeah, that's the only thing I worry about him. But yeah, he's great when he plays. His per minute stats are excellent. It's just those minutes that you worry about. After Capella, maybe, I mean, I threw Capella at you, Gasol. Was there anyone else that I've sort of just glossed over here in the center?
I mean, I don't know. Like, there's some cheap guys people are going to look at tonight. I talked about Biombo. You know, I think it's worthwhile keeping him on your radar, I guess, even though I'm very concerned about the foul trouble tonight. Another guy is John Henson. I mean, Henson's been phenomenal on a per-minute basis in the last couple games. If he draws the start and you think you can count on him for, say, like 20 to 30 minutes, he could be a terrific play. You know, Brooklyn is awful against centers, and so I could definitely see him doing some good work there. After that, it just gets pretty dicey. I mean, again, I talked about there's a lot of guys in bad matchups. Brooke Lopez is kind of interesting given that he's played more minutes recently, but again, you're going to pay $7,000 for a guy who, you know, outside of the double overtime game against the Clippers, like, had four straight games or three straight games without even paying 4x on this price. So I don't think that's where you're going for safety. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the problem with guys like Lopez and Gasol falls into this category as well too, is some of these guys have just completely shifted their games, right? Like, Lopez and Gasol are now 3-point shooters, and that's just not been something they've ever done. And the playing that far away from the basket, especially on offense, has cut into some of their rebounding. I do think you see Henson as a pretty popular play just because of that last game, but you know, Milwaukee is just, they play pretty fickle with their minutes. And just because a guy played 28 minutes last game doesn't mean he's going to play 25. And just because he starts doesn't mean he's going to play 25 either. Like, we've seen guys like, you know, they've started Miles Plumlee in the past, and they'll play him 10 minutes. And that's kind of the end of him as center. So Jason Kidd is very difficult to trust. You kind of get away from it okay because of Henson's price, I think. And I think that's the thing that will probably make people want to just kind of talk themselves into it. And I think it's probably is correct if you think he's going to get 25 minutes. But it's, I guess we have to reiterate that it's very risky. All right, that's it for us today for a Thursday NBA podcast. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. You can go over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, which is basically informing all of our amazing opinions on this podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk about a full Friday slate of basketball. Buddy, talk to you then.
Peace.